Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a weekly but probably soon to be sporadic podcast of the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press, focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host, podcast producer, and sports writer for the LSJ, joined by Free Beat writer Chris Solari and LSJ sports columnist Graham Couch. Gentlemen, everything is bad right now.
Well, that's a great way to start things.
that is very true. I mean, the fact that we're not able to be in a room together and we are truly social distancing it speaks to it just a little bit.
Yeah, it is.
What's ironic for me, of course, is that I'm actually in the room that we normally record the podcast because I needed to find a plug in downtown Lansing with all the coffee shops closed. So kind of a catch 22 in some ways for me, but here I am and there you guys are.
Yeah, Chris is in the friend zone. I'm in the friend zone. I am sitting here in my beautiful tiny apartment in downtown Lansing. Graham, I assume you were at home. Is that correct?
I am at home. I'm in the kitchen. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's where I belong.
I'm just glad you guys didn't tell me what you're wearing. I thought that's where it was headed, and I was like, yeesh.
As Graham mentioned a couple of seconds ago, we are all social distancing, as is per the rule of the government, as we try to tackle this coronavirus, and the coronavirus is affecting all of us in many different ways, and that's kind of what we're going to get into today. We'll start about the coronavirus, how it's shut down all of sports. And we'll talk about how it's affecting us personally, and then we'll move on to Michigan State on how a week ago on this podcast, we were just talking about how they would just be playing games in front of empty stadiums and no fans. But now, you know, obviously, I mean, the coronavirus news changes second by second, minute by minute, hour by hour. And obviously, of course, the NCAA tournament is no longer happening, and we'll talk about that. And on the football side, there's no pro day for MSU football. And there's also no spring sport college athlete. They will not get to play their senior years or junior years or sophomore years or freshman years. And we'll talk a little bit about that, how it's going to affect everything as well. Then after that, we are going to talk a little about our hypothetical NCAA tournament 2020. We're going to use Joe Lunardi's bracket to pick a hypothetical Final Four, a hypothetical national champion. And then after that, we're going to end things on a happier note. And I am going to quiz Graham and Chris on various sporting events in MSU history. Hope everybody is excited for that. All right, guys. Well, let's start with the coronavirus and how it's just affecting everything in sports, in news, in the world, all of our lives. So how are you guys doing bunkered down?
Chris, I mean, it's just a totally different world than your body clock is used to being right now. I mean, it's you're prepared to you sort of get yourself geared up for a march on the road. And you know, there's a rhythm to these years, and there is a time where it's things, there's still sports going on, but it's a little slower, or you're doing different types of stories. You're just not ready for it yet, and you're not ready for there ever to be nothing. And then, I don't know how Chris is doing, but he's got three young kids, so I feel for him every second of every day.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously being in the field and in what we do, sometimes it requires adaptation to what is actually going on. And so obviously I went up to Mount Pleasant yesterday trying to chase a story before they closed the casino, with all thoughts of trying to get a hold of the last guy to win a poker tournament, except the poker room was completely empty. And even though they hadn't closed the casino just yet, they told me that they were going to close the casino, and a really weird scene at the water park up there that it was still open as of yesterday afternoon. So you kind of start delving a little bit more into the newsy side. And, you know, part of what we do is being in the community, and that makes the challenge of what we do now, when you try and social distance, when you try and stay away, obviously a little more difficult to tell those stories. But from here out, though, it's going to be pretty much hunkered down as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, this is only like the third day that I have not left the apartment, and I think you guys have left your places of residence at some point over the past 3 days. Is that correct? I mean, I'm not sick or anything. I just haven't left yet. How about you guys?
Well, I've obviously been out and about. Yes. and trying to do things and keep the family fed and all the things that we need for the house as well. And trying to limit exposure to people as much as possible, Graham.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, you know, we're trying to, you know, we are trying to support local businesses with some takeout, places we care about that are in the neighborhood and could use the help. Obviously, you're not eating in. Trying to convince my baby boomer mother to take this fully seriously. What's really fascinating about this is the two age groups that seem to be struggling with it most are people who maybe aren't on social media, who are a little bit older, who are vulnerable. And then the younger people are just naturally, I mean, we were all idiots at 19, right? And they're just, you see it. And I'm not saying bars weren't packed everywhere, and they were in Chicago and DC and other places during St. Paddy's Day Saturday, but certainly college kids are a slightly less wise, slightly more selfish group. And we've all been there in our lives too.
Yeah. And I think that kind of precipitated some of the actions that we saw in the following days after the weekend, along with what was going on the national scale of seeing people in the bars and politicians and health officials reacting quickly and swiftly, saying this needs to stop.
Yeah. I mean, that video, I'm sure you guys saw that video from Florida yesterday where all the spring breakers were all just, they just put as many people as you could possibly put on a beach and just kind of living their spring break like there is no, you know, pandemic out there or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean it's a little puzzling because I think we all, I mean, first of all, when you cancel tournaments like an NCAA tournament, when you cancel sports, when you see the Masters canceled, when you see the French Open move to September, when you see the Kentucky Derby off and that's in May, and we just have no idea what's going to happen. And the bottom line is you get a certain amount of time, I think, to prove you're responsible. And then you get what you're hearing in New York. And who knows by the time people listen what's happening. They're talking about pretty much a shelter in place order, perhaps, like you have in San Francisco. And look, let's hope we don't get there, because there is – and I'll be honest. Like, what I was grateful for is you start to get a little tired of it, and boom, the NFL hits you with news. You know, and that was kind of fun for me. And you remember how much you loved it. That, and I wish there was just one sport. It wouldn't really matter what it was that was still going, and obviously that can't happen. Just something to get into. The NHL somehow could still play, and obviously that can't happen. It would be sweet. We'd all be in every game every night. It'd be like the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah, and I'm on the other side of that. I feel like the NFL is being under-reactionary in a lot of things in terms of continuing on with the draft as scheduled, but you know, basically banning fan activity. I just think that, to me, you know, there are certain things that need to be business as usual. And right now, I mean, sports is secondary. I mean, you've seen it all over the globe where everyone's kind of ceased and halted operations. And instead, the NFL is kind of plugging forward. And I get that there's probably a little bit of interest, obviously, from sports fans. There's an ability for them to capture people's attention in the market. But people's attention needs to be elsewhere right now. People need to be thinking about themselves and their families first and foremost.
Well, they do, but when you're on the couch, you know, I'd sign a waiver for the NFL. You know what I mean? Like, you just need something. And, you know, I mean, I get that it is a bad look. I don't mind what the NFL is doing. I get their optics, but I'll get over the optics. It cannot be our priority. But, man, when you got, like, 14 receivers changing teams and Tom Brady and all that stuff, you realize just how desperate you are to hear something. And I mean, unless you're telling everybody they have to shut down everything completely in terms of conversation about sports, I get that it just can't be, you know, it can't be activities. I think it can't be things that involve people interacting. But if it's
the general business,
what's that?
The general business side is a little different. I understand that, but the optics to me as well. I mean, when you've got all the other leagues shutting down, including baseball, before spring training. I mean, it's not like, you know, there's obviously an on-field component that goes with that, but there's players movement and assigning guys that comes with that can't happen without the actual on-field component. I just wonder at some point soon. I know that there have been in Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback. I mean, there were a lot of people within the organization of the NFL that didn't like the optics of it. I wonder if that doesn't get revisited at some point, especially the draft, because that's something that does impact a lot of guys that we cover at Michigan State and other colleges.
I suspect that by the time the NFL draft comes around, it'll be done by video conferencing or by phone, old school stuff like that. I don't think there will be any sort of in-person interaction with that. And the NFL does have the bit of a luxury, at least regular season-wise. I mean, obviously, they don't start till the end of or the beginning of September. So they kind of get a little affordability in terms of certain decisions they can make regarding that stuff.
Well, supposed to. I mean, again, when you have the president coming out and saying that this could linger into July and August, now what? I mean, you know, that's things that really need to be taken in mind. I mean, I know the Michigan high schools have suspended their sports, and I think there's a hope out there that people can continue to progress on the winter sports championship path. But hope is one thing, and operating like business as usual is a whole other thing to me. And I think that, you know, you err on the side of caution. You listen. It's important to me, listen to the health professionals that are at the forefront of this, that are involved in the high level discussions with government agencies that are advising, that are in the research field, not just a random doctor whose information might be a couple days old, because a couple days old information right now is bad information.
Which brings us back to this podcast. Like, by the time a lot of people listen to this podcast, a couple days information should be old. So we should keep that in mind as we talk here, because what is now might not be by the time people listen to this. I do think it was, you know, it's been a fascinating week, because it was not long ago that we really didn't see this come. Like, the way it's escalated is pretty remarkable. And I mean, when we were covering Michigan State, Ohio State, Chris, we didn't have any inclination that this could be life just a week later, right? And the idea that things could be completely canceled. And you could see the momentum towards not having fans, and could they squeeze the tournament in, and how this all needed to take place. And it's amazingly, and obviously they're much bigger things, and it's more important that we do the right thing. But it also stinks, like, on every level, right? And this is what we love this time of year. It's one of our favorite things. And to see our world get disrupted like this, and to see the guys like Cassius Winston and Kyle Arns, and to see Dayton and Rutgers and all these teams that have had these great years. And high school kids, like, you can argue that you can make some of this back to seniors by offering them another year of eligibility. It may not be the same team, the same exact run. But if you're a high school senior, you're not redoing your senior year of high school to get to play high school basketball again. You might just lose it. And that, I'll be honest, I'm glad I'm not 12 years old, because I'm glad I'm not 12 years old living in Dayton, Ohio. Because if I was 12 years old and a fan of Dayton basketball having like this remarkable season that may never happen again, I would resent the world and everything about this germ and everything for the rest of my life, and probably not handle it real well.
Well, again, that might be outdated information 5 days from now, too, and you might have a completely changed opinion if things escalate. I mean, that's the reality of this. I mean, what's a temporary distraction may at some point make you realize that is just a distraction versus the potential. I mean, the one thing that pops into my head is a lot of, I guess, American fortitude of, we can push through this, we can do this. You know, it harkens back to the 9/11 situation, which was an entirely different entity. I mean, you remember that sports leagues played on, the baseball played on the dramatic scene of George Bush in a bulletproof vest throwing out the first pitch, and the NFL continuing on. But those gatherings are the things that spreads a virus. And this isn't necessarily a moment of American zeal and zest and fortitude. I mean, the fortitude is to be able to stay at home. And, you know, I saw someone posted the other day that what is patriotic right now is doing what's best for the public good. And, you know, that's the hard thing when you talk about the NCAA tournament and I think there was over 600,000 people, 700,000 people that attended games last year. That's a lot. That's not even including fan events in all those cities. So you add that and extrapolate that out, you're talking about, you know, potentially over a million, close to 2 million people in 14 different cities, with people coming in from different places all over the globe and all over the country to be involved in that to support their teams. I mean, you can understand and see why the events were canceled.
Right. Oh, it makes total sense. You know, and I think, you know, what makes it worse for MSU fans too is just the run they were on. I think if they had continued on a pace where they were struggling a little bit, if they had not pulled that game against Iowa, if they had lost to Penn State and Maryland, it didn't look like a team that had a chance, there wouldn't be such a big what if. And I think that's made it all the harder for people.
Yeah, you know, I was just getting ready to move on to the Michigan State side part of it. Like, as you just said, I think we've done enough for the precautionary talk. We understand that the coronavirus and, you know, stopping the spread, flattening the curve, as they say, is very important. But now let's kind of look at this from a sports perspective. In terms of Michigan State, this is a team that a lot of people, it looked like it was hitting its stride at the right time. People thought they might make a run to the NCAA tournament, if not win the whole thing. And Graham, when you were talking about the Dayton fans, if you're a Michigan State fan, you also feel like that this could not have come at a worse time, so to speak.
A lot of other years it would have been better. This is a year where they had a legitimate chance, and frankly, every other year, almost every year at this point, they've had a pretty good chance. But this was the end of a beloved player in Cassius Winston. This was a run that they they had gone on a fortitude that they had shown lately. So some incredible defensive performances by Xavier Tillman, the way that Rocket Watts had come on the end of the season, the way it had been, everything they'd been through, everything that Cassius Winston had been through. I just think that, you know, that people really wanted to see what this team could do and these guys could do. And so that it adds a twinge to dealing with it. I think people get it, and they were just hopeful it wasn't real. The timing's awful because we all have priorities in life. Like, I love the NCAA tournament, and I think I've said this before, but I would trade 47. If you told me the next 47 Olympic Games were canceled through my great-great-grandchildren's lifetimes to get this one March Madness played without issue, I would sign up for it because I enjoy the Olympics because it's in July, but I really don't care that much. And we all have our own preference. Other people may feel the exact opposite, but I think a lot of people have an attachment to March Madness, and you wait for it, you look forward to it. And then if you're a Michigan State fan, you had a team that had a chance to do something interesting, and that makes it worse.
Well, with Michigan State side, I mean, imagine if this had happened a month earlier. What would the opinion have been? If it came off the Michigan loss and you lost three in a row or even blowing the game against Maryland at home, what would that feeling be like for Michigan State fans? I mean, it's obviously a pure hypothetical, but I think it maybe wouldn't have felt as painful simply because of the way that season transpired from the beginning when Joshua Langford was hurt in October through Cassius Winston, through everything else that had transpired. Had it ended a month earlier where everything was canceled before that run, fans and team might have felt a little differently and say we can, you know, kind of take a breath, process everything that we've been through in the last 3 months. But then you take that extra month, and the healing process showed with Cassius Winston, the team looked a lot better. You started to see freshmen turning into sophomores. It's the promise and potential that was taken away that I think causes a lot of that hurt. Because, I mean, let's face it. I mean, this team could have lost the first game because there's so much parity in the NCAA this year. I mean, they could have been a first-round exit, and then what? I mean, so – but again, you're talking all hypotheticals. When we're dealing with a lot of different things right now where the hypotheticals are based on formulas and based on projections and you know, disease models, the sports projections, that's – completely unpredictable. And I, you know, you watch games back now and you know the outcome of it, and it just doesn't have the same feeling.
Okay, let's move on to football here real quick. Pro Day for Michigan State football players was supposed to be this week on Michigan State's campus. And obviously now that is not going to happen with the coronavirus and everything. And, you know, you've seen some players talk about it on social media. I think Matt Seibert's been one of the guys who's really vocal about how important, you know, Pro Day was for him and for the rest of the Michigan State seniors to be able to, you know, get themselves in front of the eyes of scouts, and especially since he wasn't one of the people that was at Pro Day or at the NFL Combine, for example. I guess, what are you guys' thoughts about, you know, how that, because this kind of affects fringe players like, you know, Matt Seibert, David Dowell, Tyler Higbee, guys who could impress in front of scouts and maybe get a look as a undrafted free agent or anything like that?
It's definitely detrimental to guys who weren't. If you're at the Combine, right, it's not so bad. If you're not, it's you're trying to, your Pro Day, it's your chance to make that impression. It's your chance for the best evaluation you're going to do. And then you can't even fly to meet with these teams and that sort of stuff. It's too bad. And I think the NFL is going to have to do something when they actually open up mini camps and other things like that, with priority free agents and ways to get better evaluations on guys that they couldn't get before the draft. And it's just going to be different for them too. So I think everybody's just going to have to be flexible with that. And it stinks because this is your one shot. This is something you've been rooting for. This is something, you know, and I would love to see the NCAA, and I'm not sure this affects, you know, anybody like Josiah Scott or anybody necessarily, but say you're a junior and you left school early, and you're going to have this opportunity, and then some stuff's taken away and it doesn't look like it's clear a path to the NFL. I'd love to see the NCAA in this situation. If we're talking about guys who didn't get their NCAA tournament run, getting a whole another year, perhaps, of college basketball, why not an NFL hopeful who left early being able to say, you know what, I'm going to do another year of football now. I'd rather do it when it's a regular season, a regular path to the NFL. I'd love to see all those sort of things done that just help guys not have this be what affects and determines their life.
Yeah, from a Michigan State standpoint, I'd agree with you on that. But at the same point, I think Pro Day for those guys in particular is one where they do get in front of the eyes of the scouts. But when they're able to latch on with teams, oftentimes it's done through private workouts at teams' facilities and in front of the powers that be rather than just scouts, depending on who they send to these Pro Days as well. I mean, some teams, I mean, the Steelers, for example, for a few years sent Mike Tomlin. That's about as good as you can get outside of maybe the general manager. But a lot of times it's just regional scouts that go to these meets and, you know, they catch guys' eyes and then bring them in to their own facilities. The problem is not only the NFL restrict the travel, but they've cut down all of those opportunities for guys to go in and work out. So it's a interesting time to be a kid who knows that the window is limited for a pro athlete, a pro athletic career, whether it be football, basketball, whatever else. But especially for the NFL guys with the draft barreling down and, you know, and you only got basically a little over a month to make an impression on teams. How do you do it? I mean, it's uncharted territory.
All right. Before we move on to the next subject here, I do want to get your guys' thought about the spring sports. I think the NCAA has said they are going to try to devise a plan. This is as of Wednesday afternoon. Devise a plan to have the spring sport athletes to have another year of eligibility. I mean, do you think this is something that can easily be accomplished, or how hard is this going to be for everybody to try to do, especially with, I mean, you probably assume you adjust the scholarship limits and all that stuff. How easy or hard do you think this is going to be? Chris, go ahead.
Well, for spring sports, I don't think it'll be very hard at all. I mean, you're essentially only, I mean, Michigan State baseball, for example, was 15 games into their season, which is generally a 50-some game schedule. So, I mean, you're only talking maybe at most like a quarter of the way into your schedule. So it kind of follows in a lot of ways the redshirt rules. I think that's one thing for the spring sports. Basketball and winter sports, I don't see how it can be done. I mean, you had teams in hockey and in basketball and all the other sports whose seasons were done with their conference tournaments, and they weren't going to have a winning record. So what do you do? Do you give exemptions based on the net rankings? Well, that's not fair to the other 300 and some schools in the NCAA. Do you give I mean, there's so many parameters that go along with that for sports beyond the spring sports that I think makes it problematic to be able to do. But at the same point, for the spring sports, I absolutely can see in the way and reasoning that they're doing is because you didn't get that even a full season of competition, whereas basketball, Michigan State was 31 games into a season that last year went 39 games. So that's almost, you know, 4/5 of the way done.
Yeah, I'm good with it either way. Like, my outrage if they do it won't be much. I mean, more than half of college basketball players were just done. And so do they get a full another year because, you know, there were a third of the college basketball world still might have had games to go, you know, and still might have had an NCAA tournament or NIT or postseason they play for. You know what? I mean, it's not going to be 100% fair either way, because it's not 100% fair maybe for a kid coming in that thought he was replacing somebody or to have a senior in his way. I mean, it might be better for his career long term, but it's not entirely fair because it's not the information he had at hand. So does that kid then get let out of his letter of intent? If they want to do that, I'm good with it, because I don't think all that many kids will take advantage of it. I think a kid like Lamar Stevens would be an interesting case whose NBA prospects aren't that high, but is a tremendous college player. And I don't know if he'd want to do it again. I don't think it would affect MSU's roster. I mean, I think Winston's moving on. I think Kyle Arnes knows his body can't do it anymore. And Joshua Langford has the year to take as 2 years, frankly, if he would ever want it. But I just think at a certain point, these are extraordinary circumstances. If you want to just say that allow the extra scholarships for a year in men's and women's basketball and other winter sports. If student athletes want that, you got to find a way to pay for those scholarships certain places. I don't have an issue with any of it. Like, my outrage meter on any side of the unfairness anywhere is low, and it wouldn't be perfect. There would be some areas where you say it's not great, but if they wanted to do it, I would be okay with it. I think it would elevate the level of college basketball. Look at a guy like Kyle Arnes, for example, who I don't think is one of these kids who would come back. But look at a veteran like that and how much more mature MSU was as a basketball team when he was on the court. Like, you would get that across the country. And I believe you'd have to curtail the transfer. Like, you couldn't say, I want to come back for this extra year and then use it as a grad transfer. You'd have to come back and play for your same school, and there'd have to be certain rules that way. But they wanted to do it. I have no issue with it.
No, I do have, I think you bring up Josh Langford. I think his situation is going to be very interesting to watch in the coming weeks and months, because what's going on overseas, I spoke with someone over at MSU today. Kenny Goins is in quarantine right now in Italy in his professional career. Matt McQuaid is basically staying in his own apartment right now in Germany and trying to get home to the United States. There's going to be limited opportunities overseas now for a guy like Joshua Langford to go and pursue. There's going to be more guys that are competing for those spots. There may be less leagues open. We just don't know exactly how that's going to transpire in Europe. So for him right now, maybe the best option is to go back and play one more year now, based on what's going on elsewhere around the globe and his other paths to get to professional basketball.
Yeah, I think it probably was anyway, but this probably tightens it, because you're going to have teams fold overseas. You're going to have fewer opportunities everywhere. The calendar is not going to be the same. Now, in other regards, it could help him in terms of the healing process. Everything gets pushed back a little bit in terms of evaluations, and he's at a point where – but I just don't see how when you've been out for 16 months and you're going to be able to come back and show yourself at a level that gets you a two-way contract or anything you really want. I just think the situation at MSU is almost – too perfect to walk away from, unless he just doesn't want to be on campus anymore. Ultimately, if you're trying to prove you can stay healthy, if you're trying to have you're not going to have a larger platform anywhere else. You're not going to have, you know the trainers, you know the personnel, you know the coaches. They know your game. I just think for him, it makes a ton of sense. Unless if you truly know that foot is a ticking time bomb, and you want to just try and get a year or two professionally, whatever level you can out of it, to enjoy that different basketball, and you don't want the college experience anymore, then go do that. I think, but you have to be aware that your best option for a meaningful pro career is to come back to Michigan State.
And I think from a health standpoint, for the care of that foot, because as you mentioned, the trainers, the doctors know it. You go to a professional league overseas, you have different doctors, different people looking at it. And it may, I talked to Paul Davis a little over a week ago, and he talked about being in Russia and having multiple surgeries and things not healing right. So, from a long-term care standpoint, maybe that's even that. I mean, I'm sure that's part of his equation as well.
Okay, now we're just going to break everybody's hopes and dreams here by playing out in our heads or over this podcast a hypothetical 2020 NCAA tournament if this actually were to happen. Gentlemen, I sent you Joe Lunardi's brackets, and that's kind of what we'll use for this, once again, hypothetical exercise. Looking at those brackets, how would you pick the Final Four? I will go first in case you guys need a little bit of time to look over it again. So even though we talked about how crazy this year was parity-wise, with it seemed like anybody 1 through 17, 18 could win the title, I put 3-1 seeds and a 3 seed in the Final Four, with my Final Four being Kansas in the Midwest, Dayton in the East, Gonzaga in the West. And despite my comments 3 weeks ago about wondering why so many people were rating Michigan State, despite some results in the month or month and a half preceding that, I have Michigan State in the Final Four in the South.
Yeah, I'll start in the South with Michigan State. I mean, just the bracket that Lunardi has. I mean, if Michigan State would have got that bracket, I think they would have been absolutely over the moon. I mean, they would open with Bradley, potential for a second round matchup, likely with Virginia, who was set to play Cincinnati, although Cincinnati could have been giving them a run. But I think that, Michigan State has always been Virginia's kryptonite. Then you have potentials with, Louisville or Ohio State above them, or Illinois and Creighton below them. I think that shaped up for Michigan State fairly well in being in, to me, what I think, just gauging from this, the weakest bracket. Then from the West on that side with Gonzaga, I'd go with San Diego State in that. I think they were playing well, although at the same point, I think it would be the winner of what potentially would be Seton Hall, San Diego State in that bracket. But I'd change my mind a little bit. I think I'd go Seton Hall, having seen them.
I have BYU beating Seton Hall in the second round.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. But there's something to be said about seniors at this time of the year. And, Miles Powell, as we saw earlier in the year, is a pretty special kind of player. And then in the Midwest, I think Kansas, though I wouldn't have discounted Duke, even though they're down. There's something about Duke in the tournament that changes things. And I would have had Dayton coming out of the East.
Yeah, I'm with you on Dayton, too. I look at this bracket, and first of all, it's interesting, the whole bracket discussion. I think there was an interesting thing last weekend where everybody's in a rush to like do their own things, their own first things, and it was fine, but people were more depressed than there, and it was sort of a media misreading the public. And I still think even with this stuff now, like,
agreed.
Some of this stuff's like more depressing than for people like to look at a bracket and see what could have been. Like, I was torn on the idea of the committee doing an actual bracket. Like, I think it would have been cool for Dayton to be able to say we were a one seed in an NCAA tournament, even if it didn't happen. But it also would have been just an exercise in futility, and people who are on campuses that have bigger things going on wasting their time on that. But if this was the bracket what Lenardi had here, I would take Michigan State. I like in the South region there. I've watched a lot of Baylor. Not a huge fan of that team. Interesting to see Illinois on that, and that same thing. Watched Creighton a few times, including a horrible game against St. John's not that long ago. And I think Michigan State would have a real shot. I would take MSU out of that South regional. In the West, like Gonzaga, watched them quite a bit. San Diego State, yeah, but I would take Gonzaga coming out of that region. I also think Michigan had an interesting path that they can make a run if they could figure it out again. But I would take Gonzaga and MSU. Love Dayton. Dayton would be coming out of there. Also, I think Maryland and Penn State could make a run. Florida State, Leonard Hamilton will never get to a Final Four, no matter what the Florida State legislature says. takes details to make a Final Four.
Just something about the water in Florida. You know, their government says Florida State national champs. You know, UCF claiming football national titles. So it's just Florida, baby.
Yeah, thank goodness they did that when there wasn't anything more pressing going on for the legislature to be attention to.
And if you're 70 years old and you look like Leonard Hamilton, there's a reason your teams don't get to the Final Four, right? Like, you'd look too good. You need to be a little more haggard if you're really burning the wick at both ends. And the other side, I do think Kansas is a really strong team. I was curious about what Kentucky would do. That Midwest bracket with Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, because I think Duke is I love what they have with Trey Jones. I still think they would have been an interesting out. I like Iowa a lot. I think they would have been interesting. Like, I think the region of death, so to speak, was the Midwest. And I would pick Kansas to come out of that just because I think the bottom of that with Duke, Iowa, and Kentucky is absolutely ferocious. And so it just the odds that any individual team would get out of there. So I'd put Kansas, Gonzaga, Dayton. I put three number one seeds and MSU a three in this bracket if I did it today.
Yeah, so
Graham, so you and Phil picked the exact
same
bracket.
Yes, we did. Although I will say in the Midwest, the Midwest was kind of my chaos bracket. I would have had East Tennessee State winning two games, beating Iowa and Duke, which sounds ridiculous when you say it out loud, but that's how I filled out my bracket.
Duke lost to Stephen F. Austin this year. That's not that ridiculous this year.
And to be honest, if you're trying to play, I mean, you know, if you're trying to play the odds of something like that, the reason you're taking Kansas is, A, they look like they might be the best team in college basketball, but also because the bottom half of the region is brutal. So to take Duke, for example, means they're getting through Kentucky and Iowa, and I'm not sure about that. You know what I mean? To take Kentucky this through, you know, I think there's a tougher path for those teams, and so that's why the odds you'd have to. So even if you liked one of those teams as much as Kansas, you go Kansas there.
Yeah, two other random notes from my bracket. I have in the Midwest 7-seed Providence making the Elite Eight. And in the South, I had an Ohio State, Michigan State Elite Eight matchup for the Final Four.
Well, and I know that we're going to talk about potential champions. I'm just going to say it right here that the way this season went and everything else, that I thought Kansas would be the eventual national champion and then vacate it. So because it would put a fitting bow on this year.
Yes, exactly. All right, I will go first here. So I have a Kansas-Michigan State national title game with Kansas winning.
As I said, Kansas would be my pick there. I had Seton Hall getting there, facing Michigan State on that side of the bracket. I think that would be another epic game. Boy, I mean, I depending on how they ran through the tournament, I could see Michigan State or Seton Hall being there. But I would think that, to me, I would probably put Michigan State against Kansas and then a loss to Kansas.
Yeah,
and then the vacation and then of the title, and then everyone would hearken back and write stories about the 1986 game at Kemper Arena.
I'm going Dayton over Kansas, a rematch of the Maui game that was so fantastic. I love that Dayton team. And another rematch, a rematch of the early scrimmage, Michigan State Gonzaga. I would take Michigan State and the way Tillman's playing, defending bigs and what Michigan State's matured into. And I've watched Gonzaga. They're a fantastic team. They do not have great depth, although Michigan State had whittled its depth down quite a bit. But I think in a rematch there, I would take MSU versus Dayton, and Dayton was my national champion.
Now, that's interesting, too, because, you know, obviously Rocket Watts was hurt in that scrimmage, played only because Langford couldn't play. And then I believe Kyle Arnes was limited for that. And you didn't really have Malik Hall playing at the level he was playing at the end of the year.
No question. And what's worse for Dayton fans is they'll never get this year back. Like, I just can't. That, I mean, Rutgers, yeah, it's your first time in the NCAA tournament. It's like, oh, God, you got to wait another year. It was a group that deserved it. I think that's a sustainable culture there, things like that. But Dayton, Dayton's the team. Like, I'm really glad that I'm not I think about my maturity level and what mattered to me at a certain age. And you know, I was talking to somebody else about the idea that, you know, you hear stories about when wars happen, right? And you... And you don't just worry about the adults and the long-term ramifications. You worry about the kids seeing brothers and fathers and mothers impacted by it and what the hate that it brings out in them. If I was a 10-year-old and I saw my beloved Dayton Flyers screwed out of this season, I would become such a germaphobe that I would probably be like sitting in a college classroom years from now, you know, 7 years later, 10 years later, and I'd hear some kid cough and I would just throat punch him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I would just – it would affect me beyond belief. I don't know how you get over that if you're like a 10-year-old Dayton Flyers fan.
I mean, you know, you say that now, but, you know, a few months from now, it could be completely rendered moot because of more important things in people's lives.
Still, if you're a 10-year-old, it might not be. That's what I'm saying. The maturity of that age, you don't factor it in the same way.
Okay, we're going to end things on a little happier note. We're going to test Graham and Chris's knowledge of Michigan State basketball with a couple trivia questions here. For the listeners out there, the best way I would describe it is that these are going to be basically like a Sporkle quiz if you've ever taken those before. In those, you have 7-10 minutes or something like that to name as many things as you can in a certain topic or category. And that's what Graham and Chris are going to do here, except they're going to go back and forth naming a person or a team until they can't think of someone or they get the question wrong. If you say a correct name or team, you will hear this. If you say something incorrect, you will hear. Did that come through okay for you guys?
You got to be kidding me. How are we stepping up the technological advancements from afar?
I know, right? Apps are a beautiful thing here. We kind of improvise on the fly here. I guess we're on the honor system here. We're in the trust tree. No looking this up on your phones or on your laptops. We are going off the knowledge out of the top of your heads. Do I have your trust, guys?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. I have in front of me the list of the 30, top 30 all-time scorers in Michigan State basketball history. And Chris, I am going to have you go first. So you're going to name one, and I'll hit the bell if you're correct, and then we'll move with Graham, and then we'll go back and forth until somebody misses.
All right. I'm ready whenever you are. You tell me to go.
All right, Chris, start things off here.
Sean Respert.
Why did that take so long? Are you looking things up? He's an all-time leading scorer.
No, I was waiting for Phil to say something, and I was like, oh, no, that's on me. Sorry.
Are we going in exact order?
No. You just got a no order.
Steve Smith.
Cassius Winston.
Kalen Lucas.
Mike Robinson.
Terry Furlow.
Mateen Cleaves.
Morris Peterson.
Shannon Brown.
Uh-oh, hold on. Hold the phone.
Come on. Let's go. How do you not know?
We're not using phones. What?
I know. Shannon Brown, not among the top 30 scorers all time.
You got to remember that in the 70s, they had like 7 different guys average 42 a game and never won a game. So it's a little until the 79 team. So half of them are there.
All right. Sure. I thought we would get a little farther in this, but that's okay. Graham, congratulations on your win here. But we will keep going. We'll keep going.
How many did we go? How many did we get to?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
8. Okay.
So we missed on number 9 here. So no Shannon Brown. We'll just finish it out here. See how far we can get before we quit. Graham, go ahead.
I thought we were done. I thought I won.
You did.
Is that not the case?
You did.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's Draymond Green.
Adrian Payne.
Oh boy. I'm sorry, Chris.
Another one?
I'm sorry, Chris. Bad things are coming here. Oh, no. Yeah, Adrian Payne was like in the like 35th or something like that. I remember seeing his name down the list there somewhere. So, all right, we will stop there after two misses from Chris. So you got the first three was Scott Skiles, four Greg Kelser, the Vincent brothers, Paul Davis at number 10, Denzel Valentine, Raymar Morgan, Maurice Egger, Chris Hill, Drew Neitzel, Keith Appling, Charlie Bell, Andre Hudson, Daryl Johnson, Robert Chapman, Julius McCoy, Nick Ward at 26, Darrell Summers, Brandon Dawson, Matt Steginga, and Quentin Brooks is your top 30.
Man, Quentin Brooks.
I want to recap. About
the early years of
yeah, Quentin Brooks would have been the hard one.
Yeah, I watched a game once against East Tennessee State, I believe, at Breslin. I was like a 15-year-old kid. And Izzo's first year, or maybe it was his second year, and Brooks scored like 29. That was the only reason that team did not lose to East Tennessee State at home. That was not a very good team.
All right, one more question here for you guys. Now, admittedly, there are more of these than I thought when I originally came up with the idea, but I've already committed, so we're going to stick with it. Michigan State, in its NCAA tournament history, has wins over 54 schools. So we are going to name those 54 schools until we miss. Graham, since you won the last game, you get to go first here.
Kentucky.
Duke.
Valparaiso. Just hit the bell.
Minnesota.
Utah.
Indiana State.
Syracuse.
Florida.
Iowa State.
Kansas.
Wisconsin.
Connecticut.
Sorry.
Thank you.
New Mexico. Mexico State.
Princeton.
Eastern Michigan.
Pennsylvania.
Louisville.
I don't want to jinx it here, but you guys are doing phenomenal.
Notre Dame.
Lamar.
LSU.
Minnesota. Oh, we already said Minnesota, sorry.
Oh, he loses! Woo! Can't repeat. That's a loss. L.
I'm gonna allow it to continue.
All right. Bradley.
Virginia, as we said, they beat them all the time.
2-0 lifetime.
Harvard.
Oklahoma.
Great job here.
Miami, Florida.
Thanks to Corey Lucius, Maryland.
Seton Hall.
We already said, you said Louisville, correct? I'm making sure.
Yes.
Okay. I think back a few years ago, Georgia and Tom Izzo's nephew.
Yeah, these are getting a little dicier in certain runs, certain years you're trying to remember.
They've played a lot of games. So, yeah, we're getting into the nitty gritty here.
Getting into the nitty gritty. Yeah, let's go St. Louis.
Bucknell a couple years ago.
Good one. Delaware. Is this good radio podcast?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. You guys are rolling here. I am. We got way farther than I thought we were going to here. Especially since we only got to 8 names on the top 30 scoring list.
Yeah. It's Georgetown.
Murray State. Yes. Just hit ding.
Just hit ding.
I'm sorry, Graham.
They beat Murray State.
Well, at least according to... Oh, you know what? That's
Popeye
weird.
Jones, Murray State, 1990, overtime, first round, 1-16.
Actually, yeah, I don't know what... Oh, we're going to have to blame Michigan State's... Whoever puts the media guide together for Michigan State. That team is not on the list, but you are definitely... You are right about 1990. All right, Graham, I'll give it to you.
All right.
Thank you.
Just remember that this is being played under protest because he repeated one, which no one ever thinks of. The Big Ten school, you don't think of.
You did ask me about Louisville.
What's that?
You did ask me about Louisville. So
I just wanted to make sure you did.
Okay.
I thought you said it.
So, gotcha.
You always forget the Big Ten school, so I'm going to say Wisconsin.
I already said that.
Yeah, that already got said.
But we'll let you go.
Well, now we're even.
Yep. I'll let it slide. Give me another one.
Vermont.
That's correct. My dinger's not working.
What is that?
That is my phone.
Jesus, Phil.
Wow.
I know. Everything's falling apart.
Produce the podcast.
Everything's falling apart over here.
right. I'll give you another one. UC Santa Barbara. That's also 1990s. So yeah.
Memphis at the Palace.
Well, that's good. What the hell year is it?
I am working my way back through based on where we ate at certain tournaments.
Yeah, right. I'm thinking about the same. It's the same sort of deal. It's like, what was that?
I think we got 13 left to go here.
All right. Who did they play before? The problem is we're going to get into the deep weeds, but the 50s, we're really going to be in trouble. I would say we said UConn. We said said Louisville. That's happened twice. We did Kansas. We said Utah. Iowa State. Man, this is tough. Oh, give me one. How much time do I have?
10 seconds.
No, that's bull.
30 seconds.
Oh, this is great. Great.
Now we're at great podcasting.
Okay. Yeah, this is where it gets.
We'll talk to Chris. Do you have any more in the back pocket?
Getting harder.
Yeah, it is getting harder. Temple.
That is correct.
Man, that's good.
And
Chris, I'll give Chris the win.
I think that gives Chris the dub. All right, the app is popping up with the ad, so I can't hit the final ding.
But
congratulations, Chris.
Nice job, Chris.
On the dub. Right. I can't. We got 41 of the 54. So or 55 if we include 42 of the 55 if we include Murray State that was mysteriously
not
on this list. So I am impressed. Good job, Chris.
You know, the bigger thing is that it ends in a tie, just like everything else this season. So 1-1, perfect.
All right, any final thoughts here? We will probably not record anytime soon unless some news happens in the Michigan State world. So final thoughts for our fans, guys, and our listeners. Graham?
Yeah, no, just, you know, we'll be here for you if there's relevant news to talk about. Even if it's not, you know, we'll get together for a 20-30 minute one at some point if there's just something. We just need a little something and hopefully there will be a nugget. You know, I mean, if Joshua Langford makes a decision, the impact of that. If Xavier Tillman makes a decision, the impact of that. If there's a grad transfer who signs, the impact of that. You know, maybe post-draft, if nothing before then, you know, it certainly, or if there's a recruiting surge from MSU football or whatever, you know, because I do think there's some football stuff to get into, even though that's being wiped out. So, yeah, we'll be here for you. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, and, you know, there's obviously – it's a very fluid situation with everything that is going on. I'm going to be doing some news stuff here and there as well. So, you know, you do get pulled away sometimes from the sports world when real-world issues happen. But it certainly was an eventful and interesting year that – oh, by the way, remember a month ago when Michigan State got a new football coach? I mean, think about everything that's happened this year because – it's been an eventful and crazy year, maybe, you know, kind of continuing on the path for the last 4 or 5 years of stories that just don't stop ending or just don't seem to stop coming. But certainly an interesting time, and everybody just stay safe and be smart.
And hopefully we'll be back in your earbuds sooner before later. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Graham_couch, at Chris Solari, at Phil_friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.